History Lesson. First published in Startling Stories, May 1949. Collected in Expedition to Earth as Expedition to Earth.
The second of two stories derived from an earlier one, now lost, History Lesson is also the first of two stories in which glaciers return to cover the world. In the preface to Expedition to Earth, Clark notes his discovery of a literally chilling phrase in Will and Ariel Durant's Story of Civilization. Civilization is an interlude between ice ages, and observes, the next one is already overdue. Perhaps global warming has arrived just in time to save us.
No one could remember when the tribe had begun its long journey. The land of great rolling plains that had been its first home was now no more than a half-forgotten dream. For many years, Sean and his people had been fleeing through a country of low hills and sparkling lakes, and now the mountains lay ahead. This summer they must cross them to the southern lands, and there was little time to lose. The white terror that had come down from the poles, grinding continents to dust and freezing the very air before it, was less than a day's march behind. Sean wondered if the glaciers could climb the mountains ahead, and within his heart he dared to kindle a little flame of hope. They might prove a barrier against which even the remorseless ice would batter in vain. In the southern lands of which the legend spoke, his people might find refuge at last. It took many weeks to discover a pass through which the tribe and its animals could travel. When midsummer came, they had camped in a lonely valley where the air was thin, and the stars shone with a brilliance none had ever seen before. The summer was waning when Sean took his two sons and went ahead to explore the way. For 3 days they climbed, and for 3 nights slept, as best they could, on the freezing rocks. And on the fourth morning, there was nothing ahead but a gentle rise to a cairn of gray stones built by other travelers centuries ago. Sean felt himself trembling, and not with cold, as they walked towards the little pyramid of stones. His sons had fallen behind. No one spoke, for too much was at stake. In a little while they would know if all their hopes had been betrayed. To east and west, the wall of mountains curved away, as if embracing the land beneath. Below lay endless miles of undulating plain, with a great river swinging across it in tremendous loops. It was fertile land, one in which the tribe could raise its crops, knowing that there would be no need to flee before the harvest came. Then Sean lifted his eyes to the south, and saw the doom of all his hopes. For there, at the edge of the world, glimmered that deadly light he had seen so often to the north, the glint of ice below the horizon. There was no way forward. Through all the years of flight, the glaciers from the south had been advancing to meet them. Soon they would be crushed beneath the moving walls of ice. The southern glaciers did not reach the mountains until a generation later. In that last summer, the sons of Sean carried the sacred treasures of the tribe to the lonely cairn overlooking the plain. The ice that had once gleamed below the horizon was now almost at their feet. By the spring, it would be splintering against the mountain walls. No one understood the treasures now. They were from a past too distant for the understanding of any man alive. Their origins were lost in the mists that surrounded the Golden Age, and how they had come at last into the possession of this wandering tribe was a story that now never would be told, for it was the story of a civilization that had passed beyond recall. Once, all these pitiful relics had been treasured for some good reason, and now they had become sacred, though their meaning had long been lost. The print in the old books had faded centuries ago, though much of the lettering was still readable, if there had been any to read it. But many generations had passed since anyone had had a use for a set of 7-figure logarithms, an atlas of the world, and the score of Sibelius's 7th symphony printed, according to the flyleaf, by H.K. Chu and Sons at the city of Pekin in the year A.D. 2021. The old books were placed reverently in the little crypt that had been made to receive them. There followed a motley collection of fragments, gold and platinum coins, a broken telephoto lens, a watch, a cold light lamp, a microphone, the cutter from an electric shaver, some midget radio valves, the flotsam that had been left behind when the great tide of civilization ebbed forever. All these were carefully stowed away in their resting place. Then came 3 more relics, the most sacred of all, because the least understood. The first was a strangely shaped piece of metal, showing the coloration of intense heat. It was, in its way, the most pathetic of all these symbols from the past, for it told of man's greatest achievement and of the future he might have known. The mahogany stand on which it was mounted bore a silver plate with the inscription, "Auxiliary igniter from starboard jet of spaceship Morning Star, Earth-Moon, A.D. 1985. Next followed another miracle of the ancient science, a sphere of transparent plastic with oddly shaped pieces of metal embedded in it. At its center was a tiny capsule of synthetic radio element, surrounded by the converting screens that shifted its radiation far down the spectrum. As long as the material remained active, the sphere would be a tiny radio transmitter broadcasting power in all directions. Only a few of these spheres had ever been made. They had been designed as perpetual beacons to mark the orbits of the asteroids, but man had never reached the asteroids, and the beacons had never been used. Last of all was a flat, circular tin, very wide in comparison to its depth. It was heavily sealed and rattled when it was shaken. The tribal lore predicted that disaster would follow if it were ever opened, and no one knew that it held one of the great works of art of nearly 1,000 years before. The work was finished. The 2 men rolled the stones back into place and slowly began to descend the mountainside. Even at the last, man had given some thought to the future and had tried to preserve something for posterity.